Go talk to the geniuses that are online.
Recorded during the Redskins-Eagles Monday Night Football game, it's time to Belichick your premises. And if you have a friend who could use his premises Belichicked, or her, we don't discriminate here in the Midside, except against idiocy. Tell them about our show so we can all Belichick our premises together and elevate the level of conversation. I'm your host, Justin Hemlesneski. And joining me from our nation's capital is Daniel T. Richards.
So we're two for two. Justin, you realize that you made me click record on a podcast twice this Sunday during football. One during the normal time and then one during our flagship show, Welcome to the Midside, where you chose 1 o'clock Eastern to record that podcast.
Well, yeah, if the Patriots are playing the night game, I don't need to watch the early games.
There's not other football going on.
What, are you going to watch the Jets versus the Dolphins? Wow, that's an exciting game.
I just might. Thank you very much.
And I might re-watch 13 Reasons Why, which would be just as painful.
Hey, look, I'm at that stage in my life where I can buy the Red Zone channel, and then someone can show me the exciting parts automatically.
I hate the Red Zone channel so much. I hate it so much.
No, it's epic. It's glorious.
No, you miss all of the substance of the football games. It's like you're watching a show and all you watch is the season premiere and the season finale. You miss all the character development. It's the same thing. You miss all of how they ended up, where they ended up, and what's happening.
They show the replays if they're big. That's all I need to know.
Look, this is all part of this fantasy football fandom that I absolutely cannot stand. No one's watching the game for the game anymore. They're not watching football for football anymore. They're watching it for the stats. They're watching it for the individual performances. It's not about the football game anymore, right? It's not about contributing to a win. And it's actually, it's even worse than that when you combine it with the social media culture. So during the Patriots game, I got so annoyed. Like, I almost deleted like all of my social media.
But that's so, like a daily occurrence for you, so.
Well, it's becoming a daily occurrence for me. Yeah, definitely. Do you remember all the fog, right? The fog came down?
Mm-hmm. John Carpenter's The Fog. Terrible movie.
Yeah, or Stephen King's The Mist, also a terrible movie. Well, not too terrible, but not too great either. So that came down, and it became a horror movie for the Falcons. But I then texted
Fog during the Patriots game, for those unfamiliar.
Yo, if you're a football fan and you don't know what I mean by the fog right now, like, just turn off this podcast.
delete your account.
Yeah, delete your account.
What does that even mean? End it.
Is delete your account the new slang for kill yourself?
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, okay, well, there we go. We just coined that here in the Midside. Yeah, so during the game, the Patriots-Falcons game, the fog came down, and it was so bad the overhead cable camera didn't work, and they had to use the view behind the quarterback. Yep. And I texted you, Daniel, and a couple other people, and I was like, now broadcasting in Brady vision, which, you know, that's funny. Okay, that's funny. I know that's my joke, but I think that's pretty funny. And then one of the people I sent it to sent me back a post on Instagram. You know, they sent it like 10 minutes later, but it was the view that I was talking about, above a view for Madden, and they had it with the caption, "Oh, wow, now they're broadcasting the games in goat mode like you're playing Madden." And I just have a real problem with this. If you have time to Photoshop memes while watching the game, you're not really watching the game. This is like people who read books while they're doing cardio at the gym. If you can read a book while you're doing cardio, you're not fucking doing your cardio hard enough. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. No, it should be, this is the puking time. My legs are burning time. Like, No, it just doesn't work. And this is the problem I have with fandom. They're not real fans. These people who are making these memes and are driving these narratives on the internet, you know, such as this 28-3 comeback narrative for the against the Falcons. As much as I enjoy it as a Patriots fan, this is by being driven by people who aren't real fans of football. They're only seeing the surface level of what happened, and then they're just regurgitating it as memes while they're not really watching the games, and they're proposing as what the fandom actually is.
It's fandom for the sake of my own celebrity versus it's not an actual virtue. It's not an actual value for someone. They're not actually taking this thing as something they want to gain or keep. They're just using this thing as a vehicle for their own celebrity in the social media age.
Right. And they're doing it for their own celebrity for specifically like all these different teams. For the Patriots, there are a bunch of different accounts, right? There's Tom Brady's ego. There's the Pats militia, all these different accounts. And they become the digital representation of Patriots fans. And that's right. What I'm saying is they do not represent me here nor in a court of law. Now that's a Dane Cook reference, but yeah, they don't represent me. And it really bothers me for two reasons. One, it's just that it's so surface level and it's driving the narratives that aren't real narratives. And two, because of the immediacy of social media, it doesn't give anybody else a chance to craft the narrative because everybody just goes to them immediately or they're following them or because they're so popular with the following, they show up in your Instagram search feed or something. So it's just such a control of the narrative.
Right. I'm represented in my Patriots fandom by that obese guy who goes dressed in full silver body paint to all the Patriots games with the dangly fake masquerade jewelry that he wears and the giant revolutionary hat.
Yeah.
You know who I'm talking about.
Everybody knows who you're talking about if you're a real Patriots fan.
That's right. That guy represents me both on television and in a court of law.
And I want to be clear, that was funny. There are ways to do this and be good about it. Like the Fitzy guy, I don't know if you follow him on Instagram or anything, but he's the guy who made videos such as things Patriots fans say off of that meme and everything. And he actually took time to make a video and say intelligent things, and he actually watches the game.
Yeah. Because it's one thing to want to be part of the culture because you're such a fan of the Patriots and of football in general. And it's another thing to want to be part of that culture, although you have no actual interest in the Patriots or in football. One is, I think, legitimate fandom, and the other is, are you ready for this? Are you ready for this, Justin? It's appropriation!
Ha ha. Wow. am I allowed to talk about this right now? I mean, you're half Mexican, but as a white guy, I just don't want to chime in with the word appropriation. And I don't want to say people are appropriating.
I hereby grant you permission by moving my hands in front of my body as if I'm doing that Catholic blessing thing.
Okay.
You may now
so I can complain about people appropriating my super white New England Patriots culture because that's our right. Mascot is white, our history is white, and our fans are mainly white. So that's I can right. complain about that.
Now throwing for the Patriots, Whitey Willoughby.
No, I like. Look, Go it's interesting perfect. You use the word appropriation because I get where you're coming from, and that's with this false narratives, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Like, did you see the fake Craigslist post about the 328 fog machines that did their job and now need to be sold?
No, I didn't, but that goes along with the conspiracy theory guy sent you on Twitter who said he wouldn't put it past the Patriots to shoot off fireworks right before the Falcons were to get the ball in the second half.
Yeah, and Julio Jones said that too, that he thought the Patriots did that. And to be fair, Brady's initial reaction, he said, when he came back on the field was that it was the fireworks. But then when it didn't go away, he realized what was going on.
Yeah. Well, it's one thing to think it's the fireworks and correct yourself. It's the other thing to say, I wouldn't put it past the Patriots to use fireworks, etc. One is trying to make an observation off of reality, and the second is being a conspiracy theorist douchebag.
Well, he's definitely a douchebag and an idiot because I sent him, I said, Siri, what is the weather in Foxborough? And I screen captured it and sent it to him. And it was like cloudy, 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 cloudy all the way through like 5 a.m. And I sent him that picture and his reply to me was, it's night, which is like a non sequitur to me. It's like, so do you not understand time zones because you're in Los Angeles and you see it says 11 p.m. and you're like, oh, it's only 8. Or do you not understand the way fog works?
All of the above. All of the
right.
above.
But that's the point. This guy has traction and he believes these things and Julio Jones believes it because people are out there making these memes to seem cool and get the latest joke and be the hip cool kid on the internet. And it changes the narrative on the game. I mean, the narrative on the game has been completely changed because of these memes. Because everyone just wants to rip on the Falcons. Everyone thinks that this game was just about how bad the Falcons were.
Well, one thing I'll say before we get into that narrative in particular, which is, I didn't think this would be possible, but I actually got tired of the Super Bowl talk during the game.
Like, that's because of the 28-3 narrative meme that's been created on the internet.
It's definitely because of that, definitely. But I was just like, every single segment break was some stat about the Super Bowl. And at some point, I just thought, like, it's over. Like, yeah, it's fun to relive, but let's talk about this game and what's going on in this game or what happened this week or this season or anything. Why do we have to constantly go back to that Super Bowl, as great as it was?
Well, there's also a disconnect here. And, you know, I'm talking about this disconnect the whole time between this meme culture and the games. But there's a disconnect even when you're talking about the 28-3 and the comeback. The value in the comeback is watching the comeback. It's not knowing the comeback existed. That's why these shirts that say, like, 3-28 and then 28-3 just annoy the fuck out of me. They're not visually interesting. And all you're saying is, oh, great, we came back in the Super Bowl. Which, yes, we did. But the value to me is popping in my Three Games of Glory DVD and watching it. It's not to keep talking about it and rubbing in the face that happened.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Never thought I'd get tired of reliving that Super Bowl, but I absolutely was.
But you're not tired of reliving it. You're tired of pretending to relive it. You see the difference?
Totally, totally. Shorthand, yes.
Right, and that's what they're doing in the game, and it's why people are missing what actually happened in the game. They're trying to draw some comparison between these teams. You know, they're looking at the Falcons this year as if they have some relevance to last year. So the Falcons aren't the same team as last year, and they're not scoring the way they did last year. So everyone goes, oh, well, they're bad because they're not the Falcons of last year.
Right. So the Patriots won because the Falcons are bad.
Right. And bad means they're not the Falcons of last year. Specifically, they have a new offensive coordinator, Steve Sarkisian, not Kyle Shanahan, who's now the coach of the 49ers.
Yeah, they're doing
so specifically,
really well.
Yeah. Kyle Shanahan's so good, and he's such a loss to the Falcons that he's 0-7 with the Niners.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's where the people have concretized. That's where they focused their commentary that the Falcons are bad. It's all Steve Sarkisian's fault.
I openly admit there's probably some bias on my part because I read more about the Patriots than I read about other teams. But it seems as if every week there's an attempt made at an excuse for why the Patriots did what they did. There's never, you know, oh, this team is getting progressively better. They've done better at the, you know, the cornerback positions. They've done better on the offensive line positions. It's always, oh, the other team did X, Y, and Z bad, therefore the Patriots won. There's never a positive statement as to the Patriots might have done something positively to win the game on their own merits. This is sort of a softball question, but why is that? Why do you think
it's hatred of the good, right? It's the same thing. We see this on the macro level with the cheating. Oh, well, there's no way anyone could have dominated on this grand scale on such a long period of time. So they have to have cheated. Well, it's the same thing. They can't win games. It has to be because the other team is really, really bad. And that's just not wanting to believe that that's possible, because then you have to hold yourself to a higher standard. Or in this case, you have to look at your team and go, hey, why are you managing the clock so poorly? Hey, Matt Ryan, why at the end of the third quarter did you let the clock run out? I said at the end of the third quarter, the Falcons need to score here before the third quarter runs out. If they let the third quarter run out, the Patriots will probably most likely win this game. And you know what? They had like 8 seconds left. And rather than run up to the line and run another play to preserve the time, Matt Ryan let the clock run out and was like, what? The quarter's over? Not even knowing how much time was left in the quarter. And lo and behold, they didn't win the game.
Yeah, I was going to say, even worse than letting the clock run out, he went up and tried to snap a play not knowing what time was left on the clock, which is terrible. Just terrible.
Right, and it's those little things that people don't understand.
I was saying that this maybe happens more to other or to the Patriots, but actually the other team that gets this a lot, despite the fact that they're not my favorite team in the NFL, is the Packers. Whenever the Packers lose a game, it's not because the other team was good, it's because the Packers did something poorly. That whenever you read any analysis of a Packers game, it's, oh, they lost because they, Aaron Rodgers missed this one throw or there was a bad call or whatever. It's not because the other team played them well, because in the NFC narrative is that the Packers are the only good team, basically.
Well, the Jaguars get that, too, to a certain extent this season. I mean, maybe it's turning a little bit now because they just had another good game. But for a while this season, it was whenever the Jaguars did anything well, was the other team just was really, really bad that game. It wasn't the Jaguars were a good team, because everyone's narrative in their head was the Jaguars aren't good.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to say for a moment that who's the bodybuilder ref?
Ed Hockley.
Ed Hockley, my least favorite ref. He's reffing this game, and there's been about 700 flags. Maybe one thing that we want to touch on a tiny bit again is the ridiculousness of the flags in the Patriots game. But in this game tonight, it's like they can't go any play without a flag. This game
it's every game. Yeah, I don't want to say it's just a Patriots game. It's every game, and I'm hoping that we're in that overcompensation period where we had part-time officials and now we have full-time officials. So now they're overcompensating because all they have to do all week is look at plays and look at their own performances and look at what's actually going on. I mean, you've always heard me say it, and I've heard other people say it, there is holding on every play. So yes, if they really called it, they could call it every play. And that's what they're seeing now, that they're studying it. They're going, wait, there's fouls on every play. And now they're starting to call it that way. So they're going to have to find that middle ground again. I mean, they called offensive pass interference on Gronk again because he extended his arm.
Right. Yeah. It's, yeah.
That's a push-off to them.
That's a push-off, which is ridiculous. Anyway, we can move past that. One thing I want to
I
want to
go back to the Patriots, and specifically this storyline of the Falcons. Yeah. Well, okay, while we're talking about it, before we move on and talk about perfect here in a second, I just want to touch on something you said with this whole storyline of the Falcons being bad. You specifically said it's not like teams can get better. Didn't we talk about this last episode that Belichick said that they would be improving?
Yeah.
And one of the things the Patriots do is one of the reasons they're always successful is they get better each month, right? Like, it's okay to lose a couple games in September, maybe lose one in October, and then win out in November and December. I believe I said that exactly last week.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what they're doing. And if you look at the defense, the last few weeks have been better. And of course, the narrative is going to be just like it was last season. Oh, they haven't played a quarterback worthwhile, or they still gave up 300 yards. But the points, look at the points. And more specifically about the defense, and specifically about Atlanta, is the run defense has really stepped up. Malcolm Brown plays well. Butler got his first sack. Kyle Van Noy made that great stop on fourth and goal on the end around. And that makes it harder for a team like the Falcons to pass. Because everyone's saying, well, why didn't they pass more? Well, they set up their pass with the run because they have two great running backs in Freeman and Coleman. But if they're shut down, which they were besides like one run by Freeman, that makes it a lot harder to pass. And also, the pass defense has gotten better. The Falcons scored one touchdown, and Malcolm Butler had the interception, and the only thing that stopped it from being an interception was Julio Jones making a ridiculous play on the ball. Like, if somebody does that, you just tip your hat and you go, good job, Julio. He literally ripped the ball out of Malcolm Butler's hands. So if you look at the defense, they're literally playing better. But rather than say, oh, wow, Belichick has improved the defense, Patricia has improved the defense, they just say, oh, no, the Falcons are really bad. Really? Because they don't have the same players of last year that were scoring all those points?
Right. Indeed. I mean, I'm a little bit guilty of it as well, and not giving the benefit of the doubt some days on specific plays in particular, like when they allow fucking 4th-and-7 conversions or whatever it was. That's annoying. But
But if it's 4th and 7, I'm going to push back on you. If there's 4th and 7 and Matt Ryan runs for 7 yards, you go, he got us. Because your plan is to not let him throw the ball to Sanu Jr., not let him throw the ball to Freeman, not let him throw the ball to Julio Jones. If he has to run for 4th and 7 every time, statistically, he's not going to do that throughout the game. And look what happened. 4th and 6, right before halftime, they went for it and they didn't convert it, gave the Patriots a short field. The Patriots marched down and go up 17-0 at halftime. The strategy worked.
Yeah, it's working. And look, what I was trying to say is that I have observed a marked improvement so far, especially in the run defense. But, you know, even in the cornerback play with the two top cornerbacks or two of the top cornerbacks out, they did a pretty good job holding, you know, Julio Jones to, you know, the few yards that he had and making sure that Matt Ryan was pressured. So, you know, so far, so good.
It's one game at a time.
That's right. One game at a time. Speaking of that, I hope Vontaze Burfict is suspended for more than one game at a time, but it looks like he's not going to be, at least according to the latest news. Breaking out of CBS Sports, if you didn't watch the Steelers-Bengals game, I don't know why you didn't, because it always tends to be an entertaining game. These two teams hate each other, so they play each other hard. But part of that is not, in my opinion, intentionally trying to hurt other players. This is a part of the game that I don't understand, I don't have empathy for, and I still meet these old school, you know, fans of like the old school Raiders who are like, yeah, you know, got to rough them up, you got to hurt people. It's like, no, absolutely not. That is not part of it. So Vontaze Burfict was getting on the ground. There's a bit of a pileup. One of the Steelers players was also getting up off the ground, and Vontaze used both of his feet, his cleats, and kicked the other player in the head. It kicks him in the head. It's super clear. And then he points at the other player and basically says, oh, it's his fault, which is doubly fucking ridiculous. For anyone who's followed the league, this is not the first time Burfict has been in trouble. He has been he's been suspended before, I think twice, for intentionally hurting other players, and he's been accused of dirty hits by tons and tons and tons and tons of other players. So even Le'Veon Bell tweeted out this week that basically this guy's got to go. And that's what I want to talk to you a little bit about, Justin, is what do you do with this kind of player in the league? Because, you know, if it was Commissioner Richards, actually sounds like a nice title, I would have a zero tolerance policy for this kind of thing. Well, maybe I'd have a one tolerance policy, which is basically, we'll give you the benefit of the doubt once for this kind of thing, and maybe you'll only get suspended for a game. If this comes up again, go fuck yourself. You don't get to play. I am not interested in having you try to injure players. That's overall is bad for the league, but my God, it's just a horrible human being kind of policy, which is I don't want horrible human beings playing the game as much as possible. So certainly on the field, you know, off the field, that's a whole other discussion at the moment. But what do you think? What do you do with these kind of players?
Well, my question for you is actually what you just said about the off the field, on the field dichotomy. I'm wondering if it's a false dichotomy, bro. And what I mean by that is when you're playing this game, you're putting your physical well-being in the hands of another person. You're trusting them, right? So recently in pro wrestling, there was a woman's match where this one woman intentionally, like, I think it was a break, but she intentionally hurt the arm of another woman. And everyone started saying she just needs to be blackballed, she needs to be kicked out of pro wrestling, because in that, where it's literally scripted and staged, you are putting your trust in another person because you're helping them execute the moves. So your physical well-being is in somebody else's hand. But it's the same way in football, because you're making a deal. And you're making a deal and you're saying, I'm going to say it's okay for you to hit me if you're trying to stop me from achieving a certain objective. So if your objective is to stop me, it's okay to do that, to hit me. And in that case, I do get what the Raiders fans are saying, or any other fans. I don't want to just pick on Raiders fans. Part of the idea of roughing someone up is not saying to hurt them. It's saying you want to hit them hard so they think twice about going across the middle, and they're timid when they're trying to make that catch, so they don't catch it next time. So I get that. I get the physicality. The physicality is an important part of the game. But the reason I'm saying to you about the real life versus on the field dichotomy is it's not part of the deal that you're going to kick people with 2 feet with your cleats. So what I wonder is, why is that not battery?
Yeah.
Isn't that, I mean, if you're kicking someone in the, if I go to a bar and I'm wearing my soccer cleats and I kick somebody in the head with 2 feet, I can get arrested for that, correct?
Yeah, totally.
So why is that not battery? Why do we not have the police stand? We have the medical personnel on the side of the field. Why do we not have the police and we just go and arrest him? There's a replay. There is video evidence of him physically attacking another person. How is that not legally? I mean, maybe we need a scholar on here.
I wonder if it is legally actionable, and I wonder if this person should take that action since the NFL is not going to suspend him in any way.
I would, with all the hoopla about country music television right now. What is it? CET?
Yeah.
CMT? CET? Mm-hmm. There's a joke in there somewhere about CMT. Like,
yes, country music does cause brain damage. So.
Country music is, you okay, listen to country music if you have brain damage. Yeah, with all the stuff about CTE right now and concussions, he's just going to kick you in the head? Like, how do you not win that case?
Yeah, it's a bit ridiculous. And it's this kind of thing where it's like, for being generally aware that someone might have deflated footballs, 4-game suspension, for purposely kicking another player in the head with both of your feet and cleats, nothing. Nothing. Totally fine. We're okay with that.
Especially the injury thing works with what you always talk about with Dave Damashek's Jenga theory.
Yeah.
What if they do that to the one player? I mean, we saw, who was it last year who cost us a victory? Was it Cameron Wake, who obviously hit Jimmy Garoppolo with the intention of injuring him?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then Garoppolo got hurt and Brissett won a game, and then Brissett got hurt and we lost the game because of that?
Yeah.
I mean, seasons can change if your Jenga piece goes out. I mean, how often does Hightower get hurt? I mean, his shoulder's hurt again. If you hurt somebody's Jenga piece, they're gone.
Well, I mean, look, it's, you know, this is not the same situation because the guy who took out Rodgers, I don't think had any intention of hurting him in that way. But, like, that's it. Like, sometimes one player, especially a key player like a quarterback, and that's the season and that's millions of dollars vanishing.
Hundley was terrible, wasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, he was pretty bad. He had one rushing touchdown, but other than that, he was an atrocity. So either he's got to get way better or the Packers are screwed.
Yeah, one injury can change things, although the irony is only if you're the Dolphins can it change it for the better.
That's... yeah, Matt Moore comes in for an injured Jay Cutler, and my goodness, lights it up and saves that game for them, and It's obviously it's speculative at this point, but Matt Moore just looks like a more talented quarterback than Jay Cutler. He looks like he throws better. He looks like he has better reads. He looks like he's quicker. His timing is better. And did you see that play where Jay Cutler was sort of acting as like a decoy wide receiver or something? But he literally stood there as if he was like waiting for, you know, the walk sign to cross a street, like picking his nails. Like he wasn't, like, in a football stance. He almost looked like he didn't know where he was. And the play was going on around him, and he was just standing there with that, duh, Jay Cutler look on his face. So ridiculously offensive of a human being. So I don't wish him ill in the sense that I don't wish that he's seriously hurt, but the Dolphins are going to do much better with Matt Moore, unfortunately, for the Patriots.
Yeah, he probably didn't know where he was. I mean, you're talking about his reads. I think a first grader with dyslexia is better at reading than Jay Cutler is at reading a defense.
Yeah. Yeah.
And his injury, I don't know if you've heard, he actually has a few cracked ribs.
Oh. Okay.
So he won't be playing for at least a couple weeks.
Yeah. That sucks for him. Matt Moore, here's your shot, buddy. Here you go.
I'm as a Patriots fan, I'm kind of upset about it because I would have rather played Jay Cutler. I mean, the number of interceptions the defense would have gotten from just confusing him.
Yeah, absolutely. Would have rather have played Jay Cutler and then also the Bills. Come on. Can't the Bills just lose a game? What's a guy got to do to get a Bills loss around here? My goodness.
Send them to Foxborough?
Maybe. Hopefully. Probably. But we'll see. I'm scared that they're going to be actual contenders this year. They look decent, and their defense is pretty good. So, a little frightened of the Bills. But there it is.
That's your inexperience showing. Every year they try to build teams up.
You know, for 1 year they're going to be right.
Yeah, when Brady retires.
Yeah. But we'll see.
What about, I got to ask you about this. What okay. about the fucking ending of the Raiders game? The Raiders-Chiefs last Thursday night game.
Yeah, watching that game, I kept thinking, oh, the refs just gave it to the Chiefs. Oh, just kidding. They're giving some retribution, giving it back to the Raiders. Oh, another flag. No, they decided they want to give it to the Chiefs. How many penalties were there at the end of that game to give the Raiders like 1,000 chances at the end zone there? It was kind of insane.
Yeah, I think there were 2 penalties, and they were on the defense, and the game can't end on a defensive penalty, so there was an untimed down. I remember the ref said, we're going to play an untimed down, and they said, we're going to play another untimed down.
Yeah. Kind of crazy. Don't really like to see games end that way. Not entirely sad that the Chiefs had another loss. The Chiefs did not look like the Chiefs that beat up on the Patriots in Week 1, I think. Was it you who postulated maybe last week or maybe over the phone that now that teams have had a time to look at Kareem Hunt, they've started a game plan for him so he's not as effective?
I think and Alex Smith isn't as Alex Smith isn't as effective either. I mean, if you look at what happened with the Patriots in Week 1, as I said, look at their run defense now against the Falcons, and look at it then. Alan Branch wasn't playing as expected. Rob Ninkovich, they expected Branch to play. Rob Ninkovich retired suddenly. And they had young guys on the defensive line. And then in the fourth quarter, Hightower got hurt. And then that's when the game got blown out of control with the rushing game. Not to mention, I don't think the Patriots game planned for Hunt. I think they game planned for Kelsey and Alex Smith. And then that was what happened over the next few weeks. But now that people have figured it out, they're adjusting. And it's a lot easier to game plan for the Chiefs.
Yeah, indeed.
And that's what happens as the season goes on. These things start to adjust. Remember how at the beginning of the season, everyone thought no one would beat the Chiefs? Well, look at it now. Look at all the records. So we've got this game right now. The Eagles are 4-1 as this game is going on, and the Redskins are 3-2. So if the Redskins win this game, they'll be 4-2. And no, the Eagles are 5-1. Sorry. They'll be 4-2, and the Eagles will be 5-2. So even that division will have that log jam at the top. The Eagles are the last one loss team, and if the Redskins win, it's a whole lot of 2-loss, 3-loss, 4-loss teams.
Yeah, lots of parity this year in the league, which I like. It makes it more exciting to me when every game means something, as opposed to it's just another game and it doesn't matter if they win or lose because they have the division locked up by week 7. I don't like that. So
yeah,
I'm a fan of dominance. I know you like dominance. I'm a fan of parity. Because this is how I think about it, Justin. If there's parity and the Patriots are still dominant, how much greater of a statement is that? That's what I like.
So. I mean, you say that, but it's once again, we're just finishing up week 7, or is this week 8? What is it? We're 5-2, so it's week 7, yeah. We're just finishing up week 7, and it's the Patriots and Steelers at the top of the AFC. Or I should say the Steelers and Patriots in the correct order.
Yeah.
So how much parity is there?
I mean, ultimately not that much, but there's a lot of parity in the NFC. But we'll see. I think the rest of the season is going to be interesting. And I'm looking forward to it. Next week is the arch rival, who's not looking so good. They just got shut out by the Chargers. That is the Broncos, for anyone not familiar. That was delightful to watch. Anyone who gets shut out by the Chargers, I just have to laugh and laugh and laugh. So that should be fun. Is that one at Denver, Justin?
The Denver game is in 2 weeks or 3 weeks, buddy.
Really?
Yeah, no. They got the Chargers this weekend. And then they have the bye week, and then they have the Broncos.
Oh, sorry. I had my screen scrolled incorrectly here. That's totally my fault.
Yeah, they're about to embark on their tour of the AFC West, Chargers, Broncos, Raiders.
Yeah. Gotcha. Should be fun. Love the Chargers. Always a good time. Phillip Rivers. Hilarious. Throws the ball. It looks so goofy. Love it.
All right. So where can people send you hate messages?
You can do it via smoke signal. That's my favorite. Just get a blanket and a fire. Send it up in the air. But if you can't do that, then at Daniel T. Richards on Twitter. At Daniel T. Richards on Instagram. All those places. I'm on Snapchat too, I guess, even though I don't care anymore. So.
And if you want to send me hate messages, you can do that on Twitter or on Instagram. That's at IIBlooperII. I think you have to follow her on both accounts, though, because I think she has private accounts. But any hate mail for me, send them directly to IIBlooperII. Thanks for checking in with us. For now, we're on to not the Denver Broncos, Daniel. The San Diego Chargers.
My face, your face, instant face, go talk to whoever you want that does that stuff.